people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, writing about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on whiteresistanceradio.com. Well, here's some news about illegals from Europe. Deadline Milan. European Union urged to find safe port for migrant ships. That's not migrant ships, they're illegals. Germany has asked the European Union to find a safe port where a German humanitarian ship carrying 64 illegals in the Mediterranean can dock, following appeals from the aid group and the refusal by Italy and Malta to let them land. Berlin has asked the European Commission, the European Union's executive body, to coordinate the search for a safe port, said Stefan Ruhe Glossenkamp, the spokesman for the Germany's Interior Ministry. He said Friday that Germany trusts a large number of member states will be prepared to take in illegals, and Berlin is ready to do its part. European Union spokeswoman Tove Ernst said the Commission had initiated contacts among willing states, but said the standoff illustrated the need for predictable arrangements for disembarkation. That means to unload the illegals and begin to regularize their invader stay in Europe. Hey, I've got a better idea. Send them back. That shipload of, what was it, a shipload of 64, a German humanitarian ship. How did they get the illegals? Well, I'll tell you what they did. They probably swept into Libyan waters and in cahoots with people smugglers who'd overload their boats. This so-called humanitarian boat would pick up a load of illegals from these very risky boats used by the people smugglers, who of course, or the human traffickers they sometimes call them, who of course have charged quite a lot of money to the illegals for this passage. And then the so-called humanitarian boat will bring them over across the Mediterranean to Europe. They shouldn't be allowed to land. Italy won't let them land. Malta won't allow them to land. Send them back. Turn them around. Take your cargo back to Libya. That's what has to be done. Germany, of course, doesn't want to be the only one to be taken. That has caused so much trouble for that traitor Angela Merkel. But they want the misery to be spread throughout Europe. And notice the delicate language that's used here. It says that the German government wants predictable arrangements for disembarkation. In other words, to smooth things out so people can simply come in illegally, hit on European welfare, and eventually be assessed, and yes, maybe even some will be sent back. That's not defending European borders. Here's another interesting immigration story. Protesting migrants, well, they're not migrants, they're illegals, blocked railway station. This is Dateline Diavara, Greece. Protesting migrants, so that's illegals, clashed with police in northern Greece for a second day this past Friday, while illegals in Athens also blocked the city's main station in demonstrations that authorities said had been rigged by false reports on social media that restrictions on travel to northern Europe had been lifted. The clashes occurred outside an overcrowded illegal camp Friday when police used tear gas and stun grenades to push back hundreds of protesters carrying their belongings and trying to walk to the border between Greece and North Macedonia, about 60 kilometers to the north. It's about 40 miles, let's say. Several hundred illegals, many having spent the night outside the camp in tents or sleeping rough, were involved in the clashes in a cornfield where police set up blockades with buses and lines of riot police. Well, good for them. I hope they gave them a good wailing. Imagine the nerve of these people. You know, they invade another country, they mooch off that country's welfare, and Greece is a poor state. And then when they're unhappy, they start blocking the roads and clashing. Well, I think they ought to be clashed good and hard with tear gas and nightsticks. You know, the less these invaders are welcome, the more the signal will go out. Don't unpack, you're going back. Well, some good news, some further good news out of Europe. There was a conference I would have liked to have attended, couldn't, but it was the World Council Congress of Families, just a little bit earlier this spring, and it took place in Italy. This is a report from one of the people attending. Well, last weekend, the 13th World Congress of Families took place in the beautiful city of Verona in northern Italy. Then Verona, of course, is a city where Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's play, was set. And this particular organization, Citizen Go, played a fundamental role in this event. More than 30 public and private associations and institutions supported the event, including the Verona City Hall, the regional government, and the Italian Ministry of Family. I wonder if under the mad abortionists of Canada's Trust Fund Kid, they'd have supported a pro-family gathering. That question was not sincere. Of course they wouldn't. The conference took place under the motto, "The Winds of Change, Europe and the Global Pro-Family Movement." More than 800 people gathered over 3 days to discuss and determine new ways to defend family and life. Nearly 200 media representatives from all over the world registered for the event. Important politicians dared to come to the Congress, despite the systematic harassment that many of them received. In fact, some people declined the invitation due to this harassment, like the President of the European Union, Antonio Tajani. Those who attended, including Matteo Salvini, that is, of course, the Minister of the Interior and Deputy Prime Minister of Italy, a good man, Giorgia Meloni, she's the Secretary General of the Fratelli d'Italia party, and Ministers Marco Bussetti, Minister of Education, and Lorenzo Fontana, Minister of Family in the Italian government. And goes on to say, persistent attacks against the natural family and the lives of the unborn have generated a response for years, and the pro-family and pro-life movement is gaining more strength. We bore witness to this in Verona. The most important media in Italy and in other countries such as Spain, Germany, the United Kingdom, and France cover this event with great interest, sometimes to support and sometimes to criticize. Our president, Ignazio Arsuaga, talked about effective strategies to influence politicians. We've been doing this for quite some time with overwhelming success. He also had the opportunity to encourage the crowd during the public demonstration that was held at the end of the event. According to media sources, about 50,000 people marched at the demonstration. This event showed those who want to silence us that we are very much still alive and fighting. The cultural battle we are leading is bearing fruit, and the media and political powers are afraid of us. That's why they keep attacking us. And of course, for people dedicated to the lifestyle of death, you know, the LGBTQ, abortion on demand, type of conference is a very important reminder of their own villainy. The radical left did not miss the opportunity to try to restrict our freedom of expression, something that seems to bother them very much. Various groups such as Verona Transfeminista, what's that, the Verona Transgendered Women, men who are women, or God knows, called for a counter-demonstration near the site of the event. However, thanks to these Italian security forces, they were not able to gain access to the venue. Listen here, various police forces in North America, particularly Canada, when the forces of disruption or threatened, what do you do? Cancel the meeting. No, wrong answer. You don't cancel the meeting. You protect it. And you let those who might plan disruption or violence to know that they'll be arrested and that they better stay away or at least behave themselves. This is a lesson that should be learned and emphasized in North America and elsewhere, in Britain. So the groups can hold public meetings. This is a problem we faced in both in Denmark and in Sweden with the Skanza Forum. People had to gather surreptitiously because had the venue been widely announced, there would have been either attempts to force the hall to close us down or to attack it and disrupt the meeting. But what is needed is a government with a dedication to, that's right, freedom of speech. And the report on this conference continues. Only a few stood on the entrance steps where they rebuked the attendees, especially members of the church. As you well know, blasphemous messages and insults are not new to us. In the following photos, you can see the baby Jesus with an LGBT halo. There's a picture, sort of pudgy little Jesus. And a death threat against our campaign director in Italy, Filippo Savarese. In fact, there's on a wall there is spray painted, Eutanasia per Savarese. So, you know, euthanasia or death to organizer Savarese. Citizens Go played a leading role in the event. The workshop we managed, entitled Cyber Activism to Confront the Radical Left, was one of the best attended workshops. At the end of our panel, dozens of people came up to us to congratulate us on our work. And they have more photos from the conference and so on. Well, it's good to see a pro-family, pro-life event get off the ground and do well, and that's something that really has to be encouraged. Let's work on the good stuff and work on spreading the word to people and standing up, religious terms, testifying proudly for what we believe in. That is a really important thing. To publicly stand behind truth, and to stand behind the family. The family. I'm not saying anything that I'm sure anybody will find profound or new. Is absolutely vital. Here's another thing that has to be protested. This is a shocking attack on freedom. Faith Goldie and other hate promoters banned from presence on Facebook and Instagram. Six Canadian people and groups involved in organized hate have been banned from having any further presence on Facebook and Instagram. Those banned include one-time Toronto mayoralty candidate and far-right political commentator Faith Goldie. Also banned are the Canadian Nationalist Front and its chairman Kevin Goodrow, Aryan Strike Force, Wolves of Odin, and Soldiers of Odin, also known as Canadian Infidels. Facebook is imposing the ban after concluding the six spread hate and urge attacks or exclusion of others based on their identity, in contravention of the social media giant's policy on dangerous organizations and individuals. Such organizations and individuals, quote, have no place on our services, a Facebook spokesman said on Monday. Okay, let's back up a little bit. Faith Goldie is a commentator. She ran for mayor of Toronto. She's highly critical of illegal immigration. She's highly critical of favoring illegals over Canadians for public housing. And her campaign, including a campaign ad that was banned, that she was never allowed to run, even though she could pay for it. Faith Goldie does not fit that description. Organized hate. What's hate? Has she ever been charged, even under Canada's loosey-goosey so-called hate laws? No, she hasn't. Not just charged. Has she ever been convicted? No, she hasn't. So how did the Facebook censors come up with organized hate? Well, I guess she is simply being on a list that somebody, some helpful critic of free speech, put out there. And you know what hate is? Hate speech. Hate speech is speech that someone hates. It doesn't tell you anything about the content of the speech. But this is, of course, a bad day, again, another bad day for freedom. And the pomposity of Facebook. It says for individuals and organizations have no place on our services. Well, in a healthier country, and a country we want to build toward, there will be no place for Facebook and Instagram as long as they discriminate. These big near monopolies should be broken up into smaller companies, which do compete. But as long as they are big, they must be treated as public utilities. That is, because they have a near monopoly and there is no real competition, then they must be compelled to serve everybody. As I've mentioned before, but it's an important point. Your local electrical company cannot, which probably has a monopoly of providing electricity in your particular area, does not have the option not to provide you with electricity because you are a Christian or a pagan or a Republican or a conservative or a Democrat or a liberal or a socialist. If you can pay the bill, they must provide it for you. No discrimination allowed. Facebook should be under the same rules. They have something close to a monopoly in their area, they must be compelled. And I hope if some of you own stocks, and the stocks are in perhaps in Facebook, consider going to their annual shareholders meeting this year. And bring up this question from the floor. You know, what they're hearing, what we've got here is governments, certainly in Canada and Germany and elsewhere, using, in quotation marks, private companies to do the censorship, which at least in the United States would not be legal if imposed by the government. So the contemptible censors app, Facebook must be denounced. Let's go a little further on this. Our work against organized hate is going well, and we'll continue to review pages and groups and content against our community standards. Our work against organized hate. I focus only on Faith Goldie, but Wolves of Odin and Soldiers of Odin, to my knowledge, have not committed any violence. So how is it organized hate? They may have objections to Canada's treacherous anti-white immigration policy, but that's not hate. Goldie provides sympathetic coverage for rebel media of the 2017 white nationals, the article says white supremacists, but rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. Rebel media subsequently said goodbye to her for her part in a podcast on a neo-Nazi group's website. She ran a distant third in Toronto's mayoralty race last year. Yeah, on a shoestring budget, she did fantastically well. She responded to the ban on another social media platform, Twitter. Our enemies are weak and terrified, she wrote. They forget most revolutions were waged before social media. And there's something in what she says. We are, I think, moving toward a pre-revolutionary situation with society going rapidly in two different directions. One, globalist, which will squelch freedom of speech, flood us with aliens, and basically make us unrecognizable. In February, Goldie was among those who spoke to a convoy of truckers and others on Parliament Hill. They were protesting federal policies on pipelines, carbon taxation, and immigration. Their ranks included some so-called yellow vesters espousing anti-immigration and white nationalist messages and accusing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of treason. Well, when you permit thousands of illegals to pour into your country, almost all non-white, to replace the European founding settler people, I know treason or traitor is a pretty strong term, but Conservative leader Andrew Scheer and People's Party of Canada leader Maxime Bernier also addressed the protesters. Facebook's move to ban Goldie prompted renewed criticism Monday of Scheer for failing to denounce extremist elements in the protest. What does he have to denounce them for? A politician should be there to, yeah, not lecture, to listen. Quote, Goldie has a pretty clear track record of racist, anti-Semitic, and white supremacist messaging, said Immigration Minister Ahmed Hassan. Just an aside here. Ahmed Hassan, now he's the Somali Muslim refugee, immigration lawyer, former head of the Canadian Somali Association, as an ultimate slap in the face to white Canadians. He's our immigration minister. Goldie has a track record of anti-Semitic. She works closely with the Jewish Defense League. I don't like it. I don't think it's very good, but come on, anti-Semitic? Words actually don't mean anything. This is a series of abusive slogans. Hassan continues, I don't think it takes a lot to figure out you shouldn't be sharing a stage with that kind of individual, Hassan said. Hassan called on all politicians to disassociate themselves from anyone who promotes hatred against others. Well, what about people who want to replace our people? Like himself. Like his boss, the trust fund kid. That's hatred. We should stop dancing around with them. We should stop associating with them. And we should definitely not share a platform with them physically or in front of Parliament Hill. Listen, Muslim dude, refugee who managed to do okay in this country courtesy of the Canadian taxpayer. Politicians should listen. They don't have to share a stage. It doesn't mean because a politician appears with a person that they endorse them or support them. But they should listen to us. Scheer, in turn, accused liberals of raising the issue in a disgusting attempt to deflect attention from the SNC-Lavalin affair, which is probably true. Democratic Institutions Minister Karina Gould has been consulting with social media giants about how they intend to police their platforms to weed out hate and incitements to violence, as well as malicious foreign and domestic actors attempting to sow discord or manipulate the outcomes of the fall election. She said Monday she's not happy with the progress they've made so far and will suggest regulations will eventually need to be imposed. Well, then so be it. Let's get it out in the open that we've got official censorship. And you see how loosey-goosey it is. To my knowledge, none of the people mentioned here, but particularly Faith Goldie, has ever committed a crime. And emotions such as hate, he is simply a label slapped on opinions you don't like. It's hate. I would note that the United Kingdom has released a white paper today with regards to regulating social media and what that looks like. We are having an active conversation with our partners and allies around the world as to what this would look like in the Canadian context, said Gould. More repression. Let us hope that this election in the fall will begin to sort things out. And it's very important to recognize, as Goldie said, that revolutions have occurred without long before the social media. And, we might be in a pre-revolutionary situation. I don't want to necessarily overemphasize that, but I think people are quickly growing tired of this type of censorship. I want to thank William for passing this on to me. This is an ad that appears in the American Free Press, which is a great publication in Washington, D.C. And it's about a lawsuit, an urgent appeal from Glenn Allen. I think we have a real chance to defeat the SPLC in court. And this is by Glenn Allen. And you need to stop asking so many questions, snarled my 10th grade teacher in a Colorado town where I'd been living. He was tall, thin, bespectacled, vexed, and pointing his bony index finger at me. He was clearly having a bad day, and so he stomped around the classroom, berating the students, definitely including me, that he found particularly troublesome. But he wasn't the first or the last to complain that I asked too many questions, and he was right. In a way, I do ask too many questions for some people. The Southern Poverty Law Center, for example. I'm writing to you as a potential supporter of the Free Expression Foundation. It's a 501c3, which means if you're an American, you get a tax deduction for this. And I'll tell you a little bit more about it, where you can send your donation, if you like. And he goes on to say, because I have reason to believe you too have an inquiring mind, even on controversial sacred cow topics, and that you respect others who make similar probes, even if you may not agree with their views. Your help urgently needed. Let me speak plainly. There are overlapping networks of power in America today, run by savvy, active, unprincipled, ruthless people who give lip service to our robust First Amendment traditions, but whose real aim is to prevent honest debate on controversial topics such as race, diversity, immigration, cultural Bolshevism, and many others. Their modus operandi is to destroy those who dissent from those views they approve, and they are highly skilled in crushing anyone who steps outside the narrow lines they draw. I know I'm one of their victims, one of their many victims, and Glenn Allen is a lawyer, and he's a friend of mine. I'll continue his excellent little article in a moment, but he quotes, and there's in the ad, there's a picture of Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry said, "Shall we lie supinely on our backs until our enemies have bound us hand and foot? Or, if we wish to be free, if we mean to reserve those inestimable privileges for which we have been so long contending, if we mean not basely to abandon the noble struggle in which we have so long been engaged, we must fight," said Patrick Henry. And Glenn Allen continues, "My name is Glenn Allen. After graduating from college with a degree in philosophy, I served honorably in the U.S. Army and then attended law school, from which I graduated near the top of my class. For the next 27 years, I practiced complex litigation for a large law firm, working on cases that sometimes reached all the way to the Supreme Court. I worked ethically and diligently and earned an excellent reputation. I devoted many hours to pro bono work, helping people who needed help, whether they were black, white, Muslim, Jewish, or any other. It simply didn't matter to me what the race or religion that you were. After retiring from the law firm, I went to work for the city of Baltimore, where I threw my heart into helping solve Baltimore's often daunting legal challenges. I felt a quiet but justifiable pride in what I, raised in a broken and often poor family, had accomplished, and looked forward optimistically to the future." Now, I have to switch frames here because this was sent to me in two parts. So that was page one of the ad. And again, I want to thank Bill for sending this my way. And it continues here. Continues and then jumped away from me. These things happen. Okay, let's see if we can get this back. Start it again. And this is part of the ad featuring Glenn Allen of Baltimore in the American Free Press, announcing efforts to go after the Southern Poverty Law Center. So he's speaking about being a lawyer, and targeted by Morris Dees and the SPLC. All this changed abruptly and profoundly on August 17, 2016, when the Southern Poverty Law Center published a distorted hate watch article about me and made it a news story in dozens of papers around the country. Within 2 days, I lost my job. My reputation was destroyed, and I became a pariah in the city and legal community that I'd served honorably. That is how narrow-minded our society is. Don't kid yourself about all the blather you hear about tolerance. There is not much tolerance of dissent. This was done by the Southern Poverty Law Center. So he lost his job for the city of Baltimore, for whom he had worked very hard and very well. The fact that I worked zealously and ethically in my law practice and for the city of Baltimore was of no interest to the SPLC. Why would the SPLC care about such a thing? Its goal was to destroy a political nonconformist as a warning to others and to make money for itself, just like in the old Soviet Union. As it happened, about the time the SPLC attacked me, I had been reading a book that contained a Russian immigrant's account of her life under the old Soviet regime. As I read the account, again, as the SPLC nightmare was unfolding, I winced. Here's her account. "I look at the people who support the transformation of America in disbelief. They're destroying the very land that gave them so much opportunity. In the USSR, representatives of the Communist Party were ingrained into every aspect of civilian, official, and military life. These political organizers controlled public order by observing the behavior and speech of every citizen. People who wanted a more secure and privileged life found it necessary to join the propaganda machine in order to survive, citizens were silent out of fear of retaliation by the authorities. I winced because I felt I was reading a description of what life was fast becoming here in America under the growing domination of Soviet-style thought control networks such as the SPLC, the liberal media, the entertainment industry, our schools and campuses, and our government. I shook my head in disbelief. Could this really be happening in America? What can we do about it? Let's get real. It is happening with ever-growing intensity. The critical question is, what shall we do about it? To borrow the words from Patrick Henry's famous "Give me liberty or give me death" speech, shall we lie supinely on our backs while until our enemies have bound us hand and foot? Or, if we wish to be free, if we mean to preserve those inestimable privileges for which we have so long been contending, if we mean not to basely abandon the noble struggle in which we've been engaged, we must fight. And that's the conclusion that Glenn Allen has come to, and I think he's absolutely right. And then there's a moving picture of two victims of attacks on free speech in America. The first is Majid Nawaz. His nose looks broken, his eyes both bloody blackened, is shown after being brutally attacked by thugs who had been convinced he was a hater after being labeled as such, rather, by the Southern Poverty Law Center. At right is Richard Spencer. He's shown being cold-cocked, that is, blindsided. Somebody punched him right in the face for exercising his free speech. It's a kind of a famous picture from a couple of years ago. And Paul Angel writes, "All Americans deserve the right to free speech, whether they are on the left or the right. It's become a disheartening image seen all too frequently. A deranged radical hoping to make a political point sucker punches a perceived adversary in the face. It's been a refrain sung by the left for several years, whereby the individuals are encouraged to punch a Nazi," and I've heard that. "The problem is, in today's strange world, anyone who is not on the far left of the political spectrum is to these neo-Bolsheviks a Nazi. From the grandma working against illegal immigration to the newscaster who has the guts to point out the hypocritical posturing of the Antifa. Alt-right figure Richard Spencer was a victim of a sucker punch, and the leftist perpetrator was never apprehended or charged. More recently, critic of radical Islamists, Majid Nawaz in England, received the same barbaric treatment. And still more recently, on the campus of the University of California at Berkeley, one Zachary Greenberg viciously attacked a conservative activist in the face because the activist was protesting fake hate crimes, of which there certainly are a lot. Many more instances, unfortunately, could be cited. The Free Expression Foundation condemns this political violence. But a devil's advocate may ask, why? Isn't a good punch in the face a dramatic way to make a political point and intimidate your adversaries? It may be dramatic and intimidating, but it's still reprehensible. There are several reasons why such actions must be denounced. First, Western civilization at its best is grounded on respect for the autonomy of the individual. And this means giving the individual space to speak and advocate effectively. Enforced silence by violence violates this principle of free speech and thought. Second, political violence leads to counter-violence and a debasement of the rule of law. Individual liberties cannot flourish in an environment of thuggery and chaos. Third, when some voices are silenced by physical attacks, the likelihood of truth being discovered and made public is greatly lessened. Fourth, democracy is in a constant dynamic between stability and change. The proper balance, the proper gradual adjustments cannot be achieved if free expression is threatened. To slightly reword a famous maxim by Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, The remedy for a speech that offends is not enforced silence, whether by law, deplatforming, or the sucker punch in the face. It is more and freer speech. That is the remedy the Free Speech, Free Expression Foundation advocates. Leave the violence to the thugs. America was founded with the respect for the opinions of others, but just as assured we are confronted violently, we must all defend ourselves and our families. So if you would like to support the Free Speech Foundation, I'm going to dictate their address slowly, but I'm also going to ask that you, if you don't quite get it, that you email me at, I'll give you all the particulars, at paul@paulfromm.com. And here is the address. And I'm really glad to see Glenn Allen heading this up. Here is the address. It's called the Free Expression Foundation. And you will get a receipt for your taxes if you're an American. And here is the mailing address. P.O. Box 1479, Upper Marlboro, that's UPPERMARLBORO, Maryland, which is of course MD. The zip code is 20772. I'll give you that again, and that is the, it's called Free Expression Foundation. P.O. Box 1479, Upper Marlboro, that's UPPER, new word, MARLBORO, Maryland, or MD, 20772, and of course that's USA. Well, this is Paul Fromm, you're on the funny side of me, back with you again tomorrow. I'm going to take my my musical interlude right now. This is a song that's been sung by a lot of country and western singers over the years, Connie Smith and many others. And this is the version by Sarah Evans, which is about to begin in a minute, I think. Sarah Evans, and this is not the one I wanted. This is Sarah Evans.
Must go, but please don't wave goodbye.
That's Sarah Evans and Walk Out Backwards. Here's a great duet with George Strait and Alan Jackson, Murder on Music Row. A great song about the decline many of us feel has happened in country and western music at times. Here's a song by, not quite the one I want. This is a nice one, but I was looking for, this is Becky Hobbs, great friend of mine, or great favorite of mine, Hottest Sex in Texas. Thank you. Here's another song with Helen, another duet, Heather Miles and Justin Trevino. This time I know we're going to make it. That's Heather Miles and Justin Trevino, a great little duet this time. I know we're going to make it. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of the yard from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save